This time on the What If It Is True podcast, Lindsay Van Zyl of Catalyst talks about their beginnings, what's going on now, and the big announcement for next year's event, Catalyst, featured this time on the What If It Is True podcast. I'm Leo Brown, and this is Breadbox Media. Welcome once again to the What If It Is True podcast. I'm Leo Brown. Lindsay of Catalyst is with us today. And Catalyst is, well, I'm going to let you explain
sure,
it,
absolutely.
But I've had a little bit of experience with this, but give me the history of what Catalyst is all about and how you
so
explain
Catalyst
it.
Catalyst is, I'll give you a little bit of the long and short. So Catalyst is about 17 years old. We're an organization that focuses on investing on leaders who love the church. When we started off about 17 years ago, we were founded by a few names that people might recognize, John Maxwell, Andy
sure.
Stanley, Reggie Joyner. These were guys who were in their prime and thinking about the next generation and who's coming up next and who can we invest in. And so we really started off at investing in next generation leaders. Not that we carted at the door at our events, but there was this inference that it was for 40 and under. Hmm. And what's happened over the last 17 years is...
See, I'm right out of that demo.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Thought just pushing 39, right? So, you know, the what's happened over the last 17 years is these leaders have grown up with us, and they still come. And it's been really cool because now
Was Maxwell under 40 at the time? Was he actually...
You know, I'd hate to do the math, and I'd hate to have that on the record. I don't think he was, necessarily.
Right.
But they weren't necessarily the 40 and unders. They
right.
were wanting to do that for the next generation.
I gotcha. Right.
And,
sure.
and invest all that they had learned, all that they were continuing to learn in their leadership and in their life, and passing it along. You know, not waiting till the very end to bring up leaders, but
right.
doing it together so that we can lead together.
Yeah.
And Catalyst has become really multi-generational in the last 17 years because, like I mentioned, those 40 and unders grew up and they continued to come, and then they brought their 40 and unders,
mm-hmm.
and now they're millennials. And so we've kind of ditched the next generation leaders, and we use the language now leaders who love the church.
Mm.
What's also happened in the last 17 years with the church itself and a lot of faith-based organizations is it's not just full-time staff anymore. A lot of these churches are manned by a lot of volunteers and lay leaders and marketplace leaders who may be serving and bringing their strengths maybe during the week or on Sundays. And so we wanted to broaden that. We didn't want it to just be next generation leaders, and we didn't want it to just be full-time ministry leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted it to be people who were devoted to the local church because we believe at Catalyst, through the commission of Jesus, the local church is the hope of the world. And we have to, in order to make a difference in this world, lead well.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of leaders who are leading well, but they're not being led themselves. There's no one pouring into them, investing in them. So Catalyst, through our events and through our resources, we work to refresh these leaders, challenge them a bit, and then equip them to go out and do the work in their local context.
So 17 years ago, was it one event a year? Is that
yeah,
how it worked?
Yeah, it started off one event a year in Atlanta, Georgia. We're
okay.
still headquartered in Atlanta, and our big flagship event is still in Atlanta.
Right.
But we've grown since then. So what we call our flagship events are our two-day events, like the one we're right now in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
We do Atlanta, Cincinnati, and then one on the West Coast in Irvine at Mariners Church.
Okay.
And we also do one-day events for leaders. It's what we call internally Catalyst Acoustic. It's more workshop style.
Okay.
And,
Catalyst Unplugged.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right. So maybe not such highly experiential, but really focused in the practical. It's really how we do the equipping. So with the flagship being more the inspirational, the one days being our equipping, our workshop, being able to talk about things like, you know, time management and conflict resolution. How do you go multi-campus and how do you grow
an
organization?
And you do that within a church community. You
we
do it
do.
For the
so
church
the
community.
Only,
okay.
What's been really cool about Catalyst, we do about 9 or 10 events a year and we're continuing to grow that. The only event that we do outside of a church is the one in Atlanta just because of size.
Okay.
So we have about 9,000 leaders that come to that. So we're in an arena. The other ones, we are in a church. So it's really fun for our team. We get to serve alongside churches, come into their home base, and they've been extremely gracious with us and host us well. And then churches from around those regions come, and it's pretty unified and it's pretty fun.
So we're here in Cincinnati at the Crossroads Church here. How far, or do you know, how big of a footprint are you drawing from here in Cincinnati?
That's a great question. I wish I knew off the top of my head. I don't know for Cincinnati. I will say a month ago we were on the West Coast, and our data showed we had 26 countries represented.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'll say for Atlanta, if my data is still correct, which it was about a year old, we have about 60% that come from the Southeast region, and 44% is from outside of the Southeast region. So we got a pretty broad reach with our flagship events.
Yeah, and I was impressed in Atlanta running into so many Kentucky people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a draw. What's really cool about Catalyst is, you know, we're not a church. So we're not one denomination.
Right.
And so we have several different denominations represented that can come. And we don't necessarily speak into the like doctrine and theology. We don't feel like that's our job. We're called to just speak in leaders' lives and give them some practical resources because, hey, they're leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do this. But sometimes we need equipping and we need further refreshing and we need further challenge. And so we trust them to just take these leadership principles and utilize them in their local context. They can do that. That's why they're leaders.
Yeah.
But it's given us a wide range of reach for that reason.
Yeah. Well, let's talk specifically because this particular series is Uncommon Fellowship, and I was privileged to be a part of the Atlanta conference and sat through most of the conference.
Yeah.
And really impressed with the fact that you guys are tackling very topical, very important issues, and you're really talking about how do we as people, as human people, as diverse as we are, really come together for some sort of common understanding. And Black Lives Matters, for one. I mean, this was addressed very cogently. So talk a little bit about what inspired this particular series.
Yeah, well, here's what's so cool about God. So to give you a little bit of a backstory, as far as picking our themes and kind of keeping our North Star the North Star, we have five pillars of Catalysts. One of those is leadership. So everything we do is going to be through the filter of leadership. The other four are a little bit more topical, and that's where we rotate our themes. Their creativity, their change, their courage, and their unity.
Hmm.
So 2016, 2017, we hit unity. And we couldn't, though we would love to take credit for being so on point with what's happening in culture, we didn't necessarily plan it. We just knew unity was coming up. It was an election year.
Right.
It was a very volatile summer as a lot of just racial reconciliation issues were coming back to the public surface. We thought, we've literally had people tell us, this is really risky.
Oh, yeah.
For your brand. Like, this is just, things are too volatile. And we thought,
it seemed political even, right?
I mean, there was. Absolutely. Yeah. And we've been very careful to make sure that we're serving leaders well and not condemning leaders. You know, it's like no one wants to come to one more conference and say we've missed the mark.
You're doing this wrong.
We've missed the mark one more time.
Yeah.
And so we really prayerfully went to the Lord with this and said, you know, we want to steward this well.
Mm.
We leave nothing to chance. And coming out of that prayer time, we just realized, look, we can give credit to chance or we can give glory to God.
Mm.
And we felt in our hearts, in our spirits, that this was the year to tackle unity still, even though everything that was happening, knowing that we weren't necessarily the experts of experts, but we all had this common goal of really reaching out to leaders and saying, let's have a real conversation about unity and come together and see where we can go from here, knowing that we don't have all the answers, but we serve a Jesus who does.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was our goal. And, you know, it's been a little bit tough. I think our conversation has even gotten more refined since Atlanta because, you know, we've had feedback, we've had hard conversations. We continue, you know, we don't just like set the theme up and then let it ride. You know,
and this is the third one since Atlanta,
right? This is the third one,
yeah.
Okay. So it's been a really awesome year. It's been cool to see what's come, not just the fruit externally through our brand and through our community at large, but also our team internally. And so that's why we landed with unity. And we were really challenged. We did not want to have another conversation about Kumbaya.
Right.
You know, we didn't want this to be everyone because we're dealing with leaders.
Sure.
They know we need to get along. So
right.
We wanted this to be practical. We wanted this to address things that were currently happening. We weren't going to seek uncomfort for uncomfort's sake, but we were going to be real because, you know, there's real issues out there in the world and there's real people whose lives really matter who need us to lead well in this. And we thought, you know, we kind of went out from the mission and the vision of what if the world and whatever their belief system is or whatever they think about the church came into conflict and said, we don't know how to figure this out, but the church gets this.
Mm-hmm.
When we see the church, they're unified. They do conflict resolution. Well, we had Jo Saxon with us this morning. She reminded us of this vision. And we wanted to take on that challenge. That's what we're working towards. Again, nothing's perfect, but we're proud that we're having the conversation. We continue to have the conversation.
So, Lindsay, any pushback that you've experienced because you did take that risk? I mean, did that come along?
Absolutely. You know, anytime people's perspectives and current beliefs are challenged, mm-hmm. there's going to be pushback, and it's going to be really uncomfortable. So especially in a very politically charged election season, probably like no other in a long, long time, there was definitely pushback, because as much as you try to remain neutral, you have different people come onto the stage with different viewpoints, different backgrounds, different denominations. And so, you know, you're going to be accused of being biased.
Yeah.
And here's where we knew we were right. We had pushback from every side.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So there wasn't
just one side. Yeah.
So we just thought, you know, okay, we're presenting a broad range.
Right.
And, you know, people are going to assume they're going to pick up on things differently based on their filter. So there has been a little bit of pushback, specifically around the political election.
Sure.
Oh,
I think
this person side's more right. I think this person side's more left. You know, they're too extreme on either way. But nothing that's kept us from continuing the conversation.
Yeah.
We feel like we're still on the right track.
You know, one of the challenges in my faith experience as a Catholic, and this is something that you guys certainly addressed, at least from what I remember in Atlanta, there was an evangelical pastor who dealt with this pretty effectively. We tend to, even still, we tend to segregate our communities, right? We have a Spanish Mass, right? Which is, you go to the Spanish Mass, you will not hear English spoken. And then we have essentially, you know, the Anglo Mass and in English. And unfortunately, we haven't, even after this amount of time, and I happen to be a part of a parish which is the largest Hispanic community in our town. And it's still, as much as we try, those communities just are not integrating. They're just not. And it seems like this is part of this conversation as well, not just black and white, but also Spanish-speaking Hispanic, Anglo, whatever, to really bring this in to say, you know, there has to be integration. There eventually has to be integration, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, so my husband is South African, for instance,
okay.
and Afrikaans. And when his family moved here 25 years ago, Atlanta, Georgia, for instance, just for a case study, just for fun, talk about Atlanta. If they wanted to, they could have gone to a South African church, shopped at South African stores,
right.
gone to South African schools,
never left
South
the
African
community.
Neighborhoods in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What the church has going for us that the outside world doesn't is it's called a kingdom culture. And we have to realize that this is not it. And we're called to a higher way. It's what Jesus kept pointing to. You know, heaven on earth, heaven coming, heaven is near, kingdom come, all the, that different type of language. And so do I have the answer for church segregation? You know, we say a lot in Atlanta specifically about black, white, but also Hispanic, Korean. We have a large Asian population. That Sunday is the most segregated day of the week.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And we can't say that, oh, that's not true, that's not true. I mean, it is.
No.
It's realistic. But what if our lives were outside of Sunday, and what are we doing the Monday through Saturday that matters, and how are we living out kingdom culture outside of our churches? If we started there, maybe, versus talking about just what's happening on Sunday, I just wonder what would change, you know, on the soccer field, in the grocery store, at work. There's so much life that's lived outside of the, you know, 1 to 2 hours we spend a week on Sunday. What if we focus there first? How are we bringing kingdom to our communities, and what does that look like? A lot of questions that, as an internal team, we've started utilizing for a filter. Two things: when we come up against anything, you can talk about any, you know, homosexuality, race. God, what are you requiring of me in this, in this situation, as an individual, in my neighborhood, my gay neighbor, my black neighbor? What are you requiring of me in this, and how do I love well in this? It might look different for a lot of different people because there's so many different scenarios that we live in, so many different regions we live in.
Right.
So I don't think it's a matter of just like, hey, go find, you know, a friend of every color.
Right.
Or just go find some unsaved friends. I don't think that's too simplistic. In your situation, in your current scenario, whatever that means to you, Lord, what are you requiring of me in this? And how do I love well in this scenario? And I think we would be really delighted and surprised to realize that the Holy Spirit still speaks today. He leads us well, and he'll give us insight and creativity in those spaces. So that's kind of even what we're talking about a little bit at Catalyst is there's so much that we can criticize about our segregated Sundays. It's a real issue. I think it needs to be talked about. Continue the conversation. But what if we focused outside of into the Monday through Saturday and really dove into how am I bringing kingdom culture, not my American culture, not my Republican culture, not my white culture, not my female culture, but how am I bringing kingdom culture into this scenario? I'm just curious what would change.
Yeah. And you think by taking that approach, then Sundays will look different?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Now, am I right in remembering, wasn't there a gentleman who talked about, if I recall, he had a congregation that was largely Hispanic in a southern area. Am I making this up? Do you remember any of this?
Vaguely. Listen, this is my third event, okay, Leo?
and I think he was local. He was one of the panel guys. I don't think he was one of your main speaker guys.
Maybe Mark DeMoss.
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. Mark
DeMoss has written specifically, he leads a church, he's written specifically about the multi-ethnic.
In Tennessee? Was it Tennessee?
Yeah.
Was
there,
okay.
Georgia? I can't believe you're putting me on the spot. I should
I'm
know
sorry.
This. I'm the marketing
know.
Director.
Come
I should
on.
Know this. I'm a little sleep deprived
it's
right now.
It's a podcast. It doesn't matter.
That's right. Just edit that part out. We'll find the answer. We'll edit it back in. I believe it was Mark DeMoss. He writes specifically about, or it could have been also Scott Saul, who was in Tennessee.
You could tell me the
I'm
name I
would
know.
I'm going to start just naming names.
But there was that conversation, though,
yes,
right?
I mean,
there was
a conversation. Yeah, so we had a panel conversation at Atlanta. We're actually having another one today in Cincinnati around racial reconciliation.
Okay.
And what was your question around that?
Well, what I remember, and maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, this guy had a largely Hispanic community that was integrated. They didn't do a Spanish service. It was English, but it was truly integrated.
Okay. That might have been Mark, actually.
That sounds familiar. That name sounds familiar.
So Mark's platform and really his heart, his life message is the multi-ethnic church.
Right.
And how do we continue to dive into that conversation and continue to get out in the community and draw people in, not just wait for people to come to us.
Right.
You know, we talk about community outreach a lot in the church. I think we do a really good job. I think we do better than any other organization, I'll say that.
Okay.
Really. I think we're criticized a lot for not doing enough, but I think we do a ton. It's just not often in the public. But Mark talks specifically about, you know, how do we as a church go outside first and draw people in versus waiting for people to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark is a loving guy, no critical spirit at all. So he doesn't push off against like what he's necessarily against, just what he's for. He's for getting out in the community. Mm. He's for drawing people in. He's for being the church. And what's interesting is a lot of people on that panel, a lot of people on our stage, when they talk about their testimony, Jesus Faith-Based Word, when they talk about how they came to Christ, a lot of their stories are around the church coming to them, not them walking in on a Sunday. And we forget sometimes when we think about our stories. I grew up in the church. My parents were saved when I was a year old. But I can say, yeah, I happened. I feel like I'm just one of those people that happened. But I look back at my parents and my grandparents' story. The church came to them, discipled them in. People prayed for them. We had family members praying for them.
Wow.
And then, you know, it was a coffee meeting. It was a lunch. It wasn't just expecting people to just show up on a Sunday. That does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But often it's people connecting through community first. It's Jesus happening to people through the lives of his followers. And then they come into church. And so I don't think people, when they get a church invite, necessarily ask, you know, what's the racial status on your church?
Right.
You know, again, if we continue to keep being the kingdom to people.
Exactly.
And getting outside of our comfort zones a little bit, getting outside maybe our, you know, all-white neighborhood, all-black neighborhood, and really reaching out. It's not just a race thing. It's background. It's socioeconomic. It's all those different ways. There's lots of ways that we can be diverse. Gender, age. Age is a big one right now.
Yeah.
We got a lot of young people leaving the church, you know, going to college and not coming back. So
sure.
That's a huge need right now. So anyway, all that to say, continue to be that kingdom outside of the church walls and see what happens then inside the church walls.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, one thing that got me initially when I first kind of reverted in my faith, and I had the at least a willingness to step inside a church for the first time in forever, right? One of the things that I was impressed with was the attitude of the community to first embrace me right where I was, exactly where I was, and oddly enough, that was Crossroads in Lexington, which is now affiliated with this Crossroads,
awesome.
Right?
We're in Crossroads at Oakley.
At the time, it wasn't. And but I recall them having what seemed to be a sincere desire to want to use my gifts, right? To get me somehow plugged into whatever I could offer that community. And I guess I'd never really had that just a feeling of appreciation, like, oh, you've got something that we could use.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to discover what it was. I mean, I know that was 20, however many odd years ago, but it seemed like it happened so quickly. Like, I just kind of got swept up in this. And it wasn't even so much about you need God as much as we need you. It was kind of that was the impression that I got. And then through that experience, discovered, oh, this is what it's all about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was a really so kind of back, Lindsay, at this, just to affirm what you're saying. You know, they were practicing that kind of kingdom culture, kingdom attitude, even within the walls.
Absolutely.
Right. They were
Absolutely.
Doing that, and that's what got me.
And that's the team huddle, right? Sunday is so necessary. It's so necessary. That's the team huddle. I think the game is outside often of those Sunday morning services. I think what's so cool about your story that I picked up on, which is a lot what we're talking about here at Catalyst, is the idea of family.
Right.
Like, you were family instantly.
Yeah.
There wasn't this, like, let's wait to see how this goes. Let's make sure his attendance is perfect.
Yeah.
Let's make sure he gets his life together. And then he can come serve.
Let's see how sketchy he really is.
Right. Like, let's see if he says something that's, you know, uncomfortable to a guest. But, you know, let's... right.
I'm sure I did.
All of those things. But, you know, but there was a commitment. Because when you're family, we're in this for the long haul.
Right.
This is permanent. It's not temporary.
Right.
And we are called into the family of Christ. And once you're in, you're in. And so we need to adopt people quickly. We need to bring them in. We, you know, the tagline for this theme is brought in, looking up, and then reaching out. Mm. And it starts with being brought in. I think sometimes we wait for people to look up first.
Exactly.
And yeah. And so bringing people in, bringing their strengths, not putting them through this like massive like timeline of a test to make sure that they're everything that we need, you know, the material that we need. No, they are in.
Yeah.
They believe in Christ. We are new creatures together. We are learning this together. No one's perfect, but we are on a journey together.
I was gonna say, if you're going to wait for me to get perfect before I'm
right.
welcome.
I wouldn't be serving right now. No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's that idea of family, and I'm really encouraged. I think there's churches across the world right now that are doing that in multiple different ways, mm-hmm. getting people on board. Hey, you have somewhere to serve. Let's find that gift. Let's develop you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit sad to me, if I were to think about it deeply, the amount of gifts that go untapped. There's a lot of Jesus put. Everyone has the capacity to serve.
Exactly.
Everyone, in my opinion, has the capacity to lead.
No.
There's just a lot of people that haven't been tapped into, which is why Catalyst exists, because we want to tap into that potential, bring out the calling in people, call out that gifting, and then set them out to do what they're best equipped to do.
It was a LeaderCast event, probably 15 or so years ago, if I had to guess, 12 to 15 years ago. And I heard Sir Kenneth Robinson. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I won his book at the event.
It just
so happened that I won his book, The Element. And reading that book changed my whole perspective on just exactly what you're talking about, right? Because he talks about the bell curve and about how they're really, if we tapped into that giftedness, everybody would be excelling, right? There wouldn't be this underperformer and overachiever with everybody just kind of lumped into this middle averageness. Everyone would just excel. And I think that part of that is nurturing, affirming, encouraging, and building that giftedness in people. Mm-hmm. And if the church community could have that mission to start with, kind of what you're talking about, to connect into that kingdom mentality, then I think the Sunday changes as well.
Absolutely. It's a worldly mindset to look at external factors only. So if we as leaders, especially leaders in ministry or leaders of local churches, are only looking for external key elements, key factors to identify people as leaders. He's not socially awkward. You know, she's very professional. Mm-hmm. He speaks really well. She's a great communicator. You know, he's got an administration gift. If we're just looking for those things, we're not actually being Spirit-led, because anyone can call those out.
No.
Anyone in the world. But we have an upper hand because we have the Holy Spirit leading us and guiding us. And so, again, asking that question, Lord, what are you requiring of me this, and how do I love people well? And asking the Holy Spirit to highlight people to you, especially as a leader, when you're looking for people to mentor, when you're looking for people to raise up. You know, I would hate for people to base my leadership ability or my leadership potential off of the 10-year, you know, me 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned so much of adults because people took the time. People saw something in me. People decided to be Spirit-led and not be led by just the external factors and pour into me and continue to pour into me. And I now get to do that for other people as well. And so that is the kingdom mindset. Let's take off the worldly mindset. Let's put on the kingdom mindset and realize that everyone has something to bring, because God is that big. He didn't make anyone broken or anyone lacking. And so we have to believe that people can come to wholeness They can live out the call of their lives. It's not just for the elite few. It's not just for the people who are serving in the public eye. Everyone has something to bring. What would the church look like if we all had that mentality of each other? Mm-hmm. I think we would major less on the minors. And we would really focus in on what the Lord was wanting to do in our churches and our communities and our world.
Is that your thing, Lindsay? Major less on the minors, or did you get that from
nothing,
John C.
Maxwell? My team knows. My pet peeve is when people major on the minors. I didn't make up that phrase. I don't know who did. I adopted it.
It sounds like Maxwell.
It could be. And here's what's so cool. And, you know, speaking of Maxwell, I don't even know if it was Maxwell, but
right.
He's so ingrained his DNA
exactly,
and legacy.
Right? Yeah.
I hope to do that one day. I hope people start quoting me and they don't even know where they got that from. It's just subconscious.
So I want to ask about, because at this point, you've got to have next year planned, right? I mean, it's coming up.
We're super excited. We're actually, tomorrow, we're launching publicly, so you can even hear it first.
Okay. So what's going on for next time?
So next year's pillar is courage.
Okay.
And so the theme is of good courage. Mm. And really based off that... the verse in Joshua, it talks about being of good courage. What we realize as a team as we've delved into this study and we've prayed through it is so often when we think about the word courage, we think about something external. I have to go out and grab this external bravery from myself. Mm. But when you come to Christ, we are given a new DNA, so to speak, spiritually speaking, and we are wired with courage. Everything that we need for life and godliness, we already have wired in us when we come to Christ. And so we're going to be talking about the internal wiring of a courageous leader and how we practically and spiritually live that out. We have a fantastic lineup. I can share it with you.
Share
a little bit.
Yeah. Who do you have?
This guy, he's up and coming. He's kind of new. His name is Andy Stanley.
Yeah,
so
that guy.
You'll probably be hearing about him. He's got a little bit of a following now, but we think he's going to be really popular soon. Bill Hybels.
Oh, wow.
A guy named Tim Tebow.
Wow.
Christine Kane will be with us. We're going to have Brene Brown with us. We're going to have profiles of courage. So there's an organization, Preemptive Love. Their founder, Jeremy Courtney, they work in Iraq, and they're doing a lot right now with Syrian refugees, being the hands and feet of the church on a lot of those, you know, Syrian borders where there's a ton of conflict right now. He'll be with us. Katie Davis Majors, some people know her from her book, Kisses with Katie. She's actually going to be coming up with a new book next year. She runs a school in Uganda. She's adopted when she was, like, in her early 20s. She adopted 14 Ugandan girls.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
wow, what
she's
a story.
An incredible leader. So we're going to be profiling courageous leaders. But here's what's really cool. Courage looks different for everyone in every context. Some of us need the courage to stay right now where we are when everything says go.
Yeah.
Some of us need the courage to go when it's more comfortable to stay.
Wow.
Some of us right now just need the courage to ask for help. Mm. So we're going to be talking a little bit about all those different things, but that will be Atlanta in October 5th and 6th.
Yeah. All right. And so it all goes live?
We're going public tomorrow.
Okay.
We're launching everything, launching our site. Sharing it with our friends here in Cincy, and then just going digital with it.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, exciting stuff. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for doing what you've done and pouring yourself into this event. And how long did you say you've personally been with it now?
I've been with almost 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah. 6 years in August. So.
Terrific. Well, we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.